Are you curious about, interested in, or working within the field of anesthesiology, and you are a woman, person of color, or otherwise do not fit the stereotypical image of what an anesthesiologist looks like, then this is the podcast for you. We will discuss what life is like on the other side of the blue drape for us. Issues most relevant, such as what is anesthesia really? And we're not talking textbook definition. Tips for applying, success in residency, life as an attending, and beyond. Join us each week as we take a dive into this rich and often misunderstood field. This is your host, Dr. Alicia Peterson, and welcome to SIVO Sisters. Welcome to part two of my interview with Dr. Aisha Avery Hart. We ended part one at the start of her residency program, when an attending that she admired died. His death inspired her to request the accommodations she deserved. Her journey reminds me of a quote from Winston Churchill: "If you're going through hell, keep going, friends." Following that, is that when you said, "Oh, I'm going to get these accommodations and I'm going to make sure that I'm taking the time I need for me?"
Absolutely. That is definitely the point that made me go ahead and, you know, take it more seriously and get my paperwork together. I hate to, you know, no one likes to pull the race card, but I was the only Black resident in my class. Mm-hmm. I did see that there were a lot of differences in terms of how I was being treated versus my colleagues. Early on, I would just kind of ask them, "Hey, when you talk to so-and-so, does he do this with you?" Mm-hmm. And it would be like polar opposite. Like, they would not have any type of experience with the things I was seeing. So, mm-hmm. you know, like say one attending I would see in the hallway and passing, "Hi, Dr. So-and-so." And he would just look at the floor or look away like he didn't see me. And I would ask my colleagues, like, "Does he do this with you too?" He's like, "No, he just invited us over for beers." Like,
oh my God.
Okay.
Let's call this what it is. You experienced highly prejudiced environment. I mean, we're in the United States and you're in the field of anesthesiology, a highly white male dominated field. Were there even any faculty?
There were two Black attendings throughout the whole program. So with my particular residency, we did not have one central hospital that we rotated at. We went to several in the area. So I had one Black attending at one hospital and another at another hospital across town. So, and it was, you know, you don't know who you're going to be assigned to work with given, you know, one day to the next. So I didn't necessarily get to even work with or see those attendings very often. Yeah. But I did approach one of them who ended up being one of my mentors eventually. Mm-hmm. So that did help me a lot to have a, you know, familiar face, someone who's looking out for me, looking out for my best interests. So, and, you know, some sort of support system. Good. So, yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's tough. How do you, you know, make yourself comfortable in that kind of environment where, you know, you say good morning and somebody's looking away, right? I mean, and that's what we call like the microaggressions, you know, and that really adds up.
Yeah, there were lots, and he was not the only one by far. It became normal for me. Like, the ones, the attendings that I had who were kind and were there to teach and not discouraged became a rarity, a nice rarity for me. Like, oh, I'm happy I get to work with so-and-so because, you know, I'm going to have a nicer day with them. But it definitely was not an isolated event, not even just with the attendings, patients even who, which I'm sure all of us can relate to this, so who wanted, you know, give you their food order or tell you that, oh, the trash can's over there. I was like, I introduced myself as Dr. Avery Hart. Like, I'm not here to do those things for you, ma'am.
Right.
But, you know, they go out of their way to, you know, say things that, you know, aren't appropriate and call you the nurse and, you know, which, you know, is, you know, done intentionally because I just introduced myself as Dr. Avery Hart. So it's kind of, you know, just everything piled on top of each other. But the fact that I had so much experience, unfortunately, with, having people treat me differently in settings where I'm the only one, it was normal, which is unfortunate to say, but it wasn't anything that I was surprised about. Wow. Some of the things that did take me aback a little bit more were the people who, again, are in positions to teach me and kind of help guide and mold me through my career were taking me off to the side for, you know, heart-to-heart talks and telling me that I should just consider quitting altogether. So that was hard to hear. They, you know, more than one person telling me that, oh, if you can't handle the rigors of this type of environment, you might as well just give up now because you'll never make it as an anesthesiologist, it was really tough to hear those things. And I unfortunately ended up developing. It was rough. Let me tell you, I developed like terrible anxiety. I had never had anxiety before. Like, I didn't have a true concept of what that was for people until I was in that setting. So anxiety, depression, you know, just the works. And just knowing that it felt like so many people were against me and were, you know, working so hard to see me fail. I definitely had to, you know, go to bat for myself. And I did take steps to actually secure legal advice and make sure that I had someone available to help me through the process and make sure I was, you know, doing all the right things, you know, crossing all my T's, dotting all my I's, making sure that I had everything lined up in terms of requesting my accommodations. Because as we know, as residents, are those contracts, you may have seen some people, you know, suddenly they're not there anymore. It's like, oh, so-and-so isn't here. And, you know, they can find any reason under the sun to end your contract. And I did not want to suffer the same fate. And especially since I had seen it happen within my own program for people who looked like me. Unfortunately, they had ended contracts with a couple of other Black residents. Unfortunately, they were like, okay, I don't want them to make me the next one. So I
got to say, yeah. I mean, what you're speaking of, we know in the literature, it happens all across this country, across many different specialties, particularly the competitive specialties. I've read about Black residents facing many of these, except they didn't get legal counsel until well after much damage has been done, well after they've been, you know, released from the organization for whatever bogus charges. How did you know to get legal counsel sooner rather than later?
Just instinct and not trusting it. I saw, you know, early on, they let me know that they were not on my side necessarily. I no longer even felt like I was a welcome member of the department, which was, again, it was very sad, but I kept my goal in mind.
What point in your training did you feel as if, okay, now their discouragement has ramped up and I'm concerned that they're going to try to mess with my contract? When did you, you know, I'm trying to get a sense of the tenor.
I would say it was, I think, CA2 year. So like my third year of residency, essentially. And that's around the same time that my attending passed away. And I had seen other residents being let go, unfortunately. And just knowing that I wasn't in enough space where people really had my back. So I was like, I don't want to be reactive to anything. I wanted to be as proactive as possible. So I actually had the attorney help me draft, you know, my paperwork to request the accommodations. I wanted to make sure that everything was in there that, you know, would help keep me protected. That's all I wanted to go into it thinking, you know, I don't want them to find some loophole and some reason to, you know, get rid of me, knowing that they already want me to, you know, leave or drop out. So that was my thought process.
What kind of attorney did you get? And what was your process for finding that attorney?
He was an employment attorney. So he dealt with of different discrimination types of cases with employers. And so, funny stories, a really small world. The way that I got in touch with this particular attorney in this law office was through an attending that I was introduced to by one of my old medical school classmates who was diagnosed with the same condition that I have. And she was finding that as an attending, she had to take some legal steps in terms of her contracts to make sure that she was protected in her practice. So she, you know, passed on that information to me so that I could work with him to do the same and make sure that I would be protected in my pursuit of gaining, you know, these accommodations that I was seeking. So small world, but it worked out really well.
Wow. Okay. So now you have the attorney written request for accommodations, your residency program. They knew that you had an attorney.
They did not. I actually never disclosed that information to them, but I wanted to keep them in my back pocket, so to speak. Like, okay, I want to be ready to go if something does happen. But I don't think they ever knew.
Okay. That means that they didn't try to move on having you dismissed from the program.
Not directly, I would say. So after filing or my request for the accommodations, they were granted. But after that, you would think, okay, smooth sailing from there. Everything's, you know, all lined up and good to go. even though I had everything approved and all the paperwork was signed off, everything was filed the way it was supposed to be, no one followed them. They chose to ignore the accommodations. So nothing changed in terms of how I was being scheduled, or, you know, it was all pertaining to, you know, frequency of call and different things like that, so that I could rest and have time to actually go see my doctors when I needed to. They weren't followed. They were ignored. And it was almost as a, you know, I dare you to say something about it. You know, if you want to finish, you'll just do it. That was kind of the attitude I was getting. And of course, I'm continuing to deteriorate and getting worse. And, you know, just going back to the attending that had the similar condition, I, you know, they made it clear that they didn't care about how I was doing or how what they were doing to me would affect me eventually.
What did you do when you saw that this wasn't being adhered to?
So several emails were sent back and forth. I was working primarily through the GME office, the Graduate Medical Education Office, that essentially is the, I guess, the hub for, it's like our HR essentially in residency. So made them aware of the fact that I have these accommodations, they're just not being followed. And, you know, I'm getting worse. I haven't really been given time to do what I need to do to take care of myself. They even received pushback. So attendings were communicating back to that office saying that, oh, we're following, we're doing, you know, everything we're supposed to, but they weren't. And there was really no checks and balances, honestly. So it was like, once the schedule was made, that was it. I've had, I remember one attending just outright told me after I pointed out, like, this doesn't line up with my accommodations. It, their response was no changes. And that was it. Like, that was the end of the discussion. There was no discussion. And again, this is approaching my, you know, last year of residency. So I didn't put up a whole lot of a fight, much of a fuss, because I'm just trying to get through. I did not want them to make me another example of a resident that they found a reason to get rid of, despite the fact that I had everything approved and in writing. It was a lot of tongue biting, a lot of keeping my head down and just working hard and trying to push through it, because, yeah, it was rough. I can't lie. It was definitely a rough time for me.
Oh my gosh. It's, we're just so happy that you made it through. And I would really encourage any trainee, anybody actually, who's going through something akin to what you've outlined, to report that, report it like all day long, because it's unacceptable. Mm-hmm. It's illegal. You know, you have rights.
Yes.
It's the reason why I think many residents are trying to unionize. Because we can't tolerate that. Okay, so you made it through. You graduated from your residency. How did you land on your practice and on all the things?
So for my first job as an attending, you know, you have to submit so many letters of recommendation, and a lot of times they want a letter from your program director, which automatically, you know, made my spidey senses go off. I was like, I don't trust these people to vouch on my behalf. Like, based on the experience that I've had, I don't trust it. So I, you know, kind of stalled on that as long as I could. I, you know, tried to put it off and hoping that they would just forget about it with all the other positive recommendations I received. But, you know, they insisted that I did have that submitted. So I ended up writing my program director and asking, you know, just very straightforward, not beating around the bush at all, are you willing to write a strong positive letter in support of my application for, you know, this job as an attending, thinking that, you know, perhaps just putting whatever differences, which again, I had not done anything to make anyone dislike me. I just knew that I was a target throughout my residency. But I got a response of, you know, kind response, like, oh, yeah, I'd be more than happy to do that for you, more than willing to support you. I'm so excited for you. But shortly after contacting them to request that, I received notification, a certified letter from my would-be employer telling me that they received information that made them no longer want to move forward with my contract, and they terminated their offer of employment. So, so not only were they affecting me as a resident, they continued to take steps to hamper, you know, my future as an attending after residency, which again, very discouraging. I could not believe that would even happen, but it did. And then I had to lawyer up again. I took some steps to try to rectify that situation as well, but eventually went on to, you know, find a nice private practice to join. It's a great area. You know, I was really happy with the group I was with. They were very collegial. And I was like, oh, this is a, you know, great start, a great first position as an attending. Mm-hmm. And then COVID hit, and it was like, and everything changed with COVID. So it was just a whirlwind, but I'm really, really, really happy with how everything turned out. Everything for a reason, you know?
Right. Yeah. So,
but I have since left that position and have moved on to working local positions as an anesthesiologist, which mm-hmm. I think has been one of the greatest decisions I've made for my career. Mm-hmm. I really do appreciate the level of autonomy I have as a physician. So I'm able to dictate my schedule versus having someone else tell me what schedule I'm going to be working. I'm able to say what I'm willing to do and not do in terms of call schedules and weekends and things like that. You know, stuff that I wasn't able to do in private practice is like, you just do what needs to be done regardless. Mm-hmm. But with this, I'm able to, you know, basically delineate exactly what I want to happen, the hours I want to work, the days mm-hmm. I'm going to be there, whether I want to work call or not. And, you know, it's been great.
Oh, wow. How do you get in touch with the locums person? You know,
so I think that all started with LinkedIn and having a LinkedIn profile and showing that I was a recent graduate and the experience that I had. So they are looking. These recruiters are, they're like hiding in the bushes. They are ready to pounce and they do not play. And once one contacts you, it's like the word gets out and all these other companies. So I want to say, even as a resident, prior to even graduating, I had locums companies and different people reaching out to me via email, at least. Mm-hmm. And after graduation, the calls, the emails, the texts, you know, everything started coming through. So there was definitely a wealth of opportunities and options to choose from. So,
and how much traveling do you do?
I honestly have been taking longer contracts. You have, I guess, the freedom to do whatever you like. So if you want to, you know, bounce around from, you know, 4 weeks here, 4 weeks in another city, that's totally fine and is possible. I like to get a little bit more settled in my position. So my first locums position I took, I worked there for maybe 8 months. Mm-hmm. And my current position that I'm in right now, I've actually been there over a year. So mm-hmm. yeah, just kind of depends. And just because I'm happy where I am, I don't really have a reason to keep bouncing around. So I was like, well, I'll just stay put for a while.
Yeah. And then, I mean, if you, would you hire on or be like, no, you want to stay locums?
I've actually received several offers. They have tried to get me to stay and become a permanent employee many times. Yeah. But it really just is that freedom that I don't want to lose, at least not now. Mm-hmm. I like that I don't have to come in on weekends and I have more of my time to myself. And, you know, the older I get, the more work-life balance is valued. You know, it's yeah. huge to me. Like, I need to have yeah. time to take care of me and, you know, all those self-care things that I, you know, am behind on doing that I, you know, want to make a permanent part of my schedule now. So
yeah,
I've very kindly declined for now or put it on the back burner, but they do ask me pretty frequently if I want to join them permanently.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just want to freeze this moment because here you are, fresh trainee, right? Looking for a job and you were hit with this just, it's just sad that the, you know, that program didn't want to support you, but it's okay. Cause then you realize I don't want your job anyway. Cause you found that with locum, you get the autonomy mm-hmm. and the freedom that you want. So it really was, it happened for your good, right? And not yeah. to be against you, but for you. And so I'm so glad yes. that you pivoted and just redirected and found this completely new avenue to generate revenue.
And that's the one thing I don't think was emphasized, at least to me as a resident, that there are so many options out there. You know, the people who were telling me I need to consider quitting made me think that all jobs are going to be just like residency. And you're working 24-hour call 2 and 3 times a week and mm-hmm. almost, you know, 90-hour weeks every week. And like, they made me feel like that was my future for the rest of my life. And mm-hmm. it was great finding out that that was not the case at all. And that there are options out there, you know.
Nice.
Yes, I actually worked through a company. Some people work as, you know, contractors, 1099 employees, and they mm-hmm. work directly with the hospitals. But I do have a locums company kind of making those negotiations on my behalf. So we let them know what we want to be paid and they let us know if they're willing to. And oftentimes because they need the help, which mm-hmm. I don't know if, you know, people looking at jobs right now, we are in very, very high demand. So yeah. It's almost like you name the price, whatever you want, we'll take it because we need the help. So wow. We're in a good position right now to be in.
Nice. And then you already expressed that you say what kind of cases you want, the hours, mm-hmm. the call, no call. And then how do you do with, do you set your own money aside then and you make sure your benefits and your health insurance and all of that? How does that work?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that is the biggest difference, I would say, between a locums and a permanent position. You are responsible for your own healthcare, you know, insurance and different things like that, which wasn't a problem. It was more so just kind of researching it ahead of time before I signed up for that type of position, so I could set myself up to be successful. So I hired an accountant to kind of help me with, you know, number crunching, and a tax professional to kind of help me with other things, and setting up an LLC to make sure I was doing what was most effective and efficient for tax purposes. So I just sought out the help of people who are better at those types of things than me. So I look for experts to help me along the way. And it really hasn't been difficult at all, I have to say. It's been pretty smooth sailing.
Nice. And so you hear that, guys. You don't have to be the ones doing everything. As a matter of fact, you really should not be doing everything, but instead assembling a team, a team that will, again, just ensure that you're making the best decisions for yourself long term. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So you have your team in place and you're in a really good spot that you like. And Wonderful.
Absolutely. It makes a difference to not have to worry about all those extra things when you do, you know, just hire someone to do it for you. So you can just focus on being a wonderful doctor and providing the best possible care for your patients and, you know, really focusing on what's important.
When would be the best time for someone to really look at, you know, not only private practice versus you know, academics, but, you know, that third option? Some people think that coming out of training to do locums is not a good idea.
So I definitely got a lot of that when I was kind of, you know, shopping around and seeing what my options were and getting people's opinions. There's definitely a stigma around locums work. Some people had me thinking that that's just where all the undesirables go. People that can't get hired permanently elsewhere, they have to work through locums, is kind of the impression people were giving me and telling me, like, no, you shouldn't do that, because then people are going to think that you couldn't get a job somewhere else. So I had that, you know, negative, I guess, that piece on one side, and then the other, having the autonomy I was telling you about. And especially if you don't have ties to any particular geographical area, I would say go for it. Honestly, it may be better in some ways to start off as locums, because even in my position, like I was saying, I've been offered permanent roles in in both of the locums jobs that I've done. Actually, they wanted me to stay on permanently. So it's kind of like you can work for a while, see if you like it. And if you don't, you don't have to stay. If you do love it and you want to stay there forever and plant roots, you can do that too. So it's just that it opens you up to a lot of variety and options, you know, across the country. So I really think that it would be a nice first step for a lot of new graduates. If you're not really sure where you want to go, if you don't, you know, have a particular need to be in any particular city or state, you know, it's a way to kind of see what's out there and see what works best for you.
Yeah. Oh, that's so refreshing to hear. And I think when we hear advice like that, like these negative things, the stigma against locums, I mean, you have to consider the source, right? Like, these are people who have most likely always worked a job. And to do something different is very intimidating. The thought of being anything other than W-2 can be very scary for people. So it's not good to get advice from people who are, you know, fearful and never really did it themselves, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that you just, again, throughout your journey, we see this through line of you being courageous and persevering through really trying environment.
Well, thank you. And that's really the one thing I wanted to pass on to your listeners. If I can't share anything else, it's to not allow the naysayers to discourage you. There are people who are working overtime to do and say different things to discourage you, who don't want to see you succeed, who don't want to, you know, see you progress to becoming an attending, becoming successful. Don't allow that negativity to infiltrate your psyche and have you, you know, change your, you know, the way you talk to yourself and encouraging yourself, making sure that, you know, you do belong. I just want to make sure they understand that. And we need you. I may sound cliche, but representation matters and we need you. Please do not let the naysayers and all the negative, you know, people who may be coming in and out of your life for various reasons deter you. Just, you know, let it go in one ear and out the other and just say, okay, nod your head. I did a lot of that. Okay. And I was like, I didn't really pay much attention because I was hearing so much, like, okay, if I was, you know, told that I wasn't as good as another resident, okay, you know, just, you know, go back to what I was doing. Like, don't let it deter you. Like, you will encounter it if you are, in fact, a, you know, non-traditional person or a, you know, person of color or Black woman, mm-hmm. you know, part, but don't let it deter you. We need right. you. Please stay oh. with it and stay encouraged.
So it could be an obstacle Absolutely. Or it could be a stepping stone. And you just, they threw dirt on you and you just shook it and stepped on it. Shook it off, stepped on it, right?
exactly.
There's that quote that I just absolutely love. It's a Mexican proverb. They tried to bury us, but they didn't know we were seeds.
I like that. That's really, yeah. Yes. That's a perfect saying for this. Absolutely.
and people feel so ashamed to talk about these things. But it's like, no, it's yes. not you. You know, that in, what you've experienced is so common amongst all of us, which is why we need to talk about it. We need to get it out in the open.
But no, it was really put on my heart to share, you know, we are human. Although I feel like residency tries to teach us that we're not, like, we don't need sleep. We don't need food and water like everyone else. You don't. We're taught that we're robots and that's how we're trained. But I mean, we still have to take care of ourselves and, you know, you just have to make that a priority. So. I was more than happy to share my story in hopes that it'll help someone else and encourage them and just, you know, hang in there. You're not by yourself and we need you. Hang in there. We need you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of SIVO Sisters. If you love this episode as much as I did, head on over and rate and subscribe so you don't miss out. New episodes drop every week on a Monday because we all can use a little something, something to get us through the week. Am I right? I'd love to hear more from you on the topics that you want to hear. So let me know in the comments. This is Dr. Peterson signing off. See you next time.